So glad to see everybody today. Nice to have a break in the day and see some friendly faces and talk about breeding. So I want to make a couple of announcements before we go. First, the tagline class, which I had to re-record because we had all those sound issues, is up and running. I shortened it significantly. I think it works really well for puppy owners as well as breeders. So take a look at it. It's on your dashboard. You should be able to see it. And our taglines, we are selling taglines now. They're $5 for one and $4 for more than four, I think, or four or more. Now I can't remember. They are in stock. You can order them and they'll ship them the next day. So those are available to you. A couple of upcoming events. Tomorrow, drum roll, Dr. Bob Hutchinson is going to be on the Good Dog webinar. If you have not had an opportunity to meet Dr. Hutch, as he is known, he is quite a character, very opinionated, but in many ways, Hutch transformed a lot of the things we do with neonatal care, particularly in neonatal care. He and Brian Greenfield really took our knowledge of how to care for three-day-old puppies that were ill, things like that, and launched it. Hutch is also the one that talked about back-to-back breedings. So we've sent in a bunch of questions from Avidog for him to answer. But I really hope you guys can join us. If not, Good Dog is recording it, and I believe it will be available whether you're a Good Dog breeder or not. They're going to make the recording available. So it should just be a great time. Tomorrow, 1 o'clock, go into the Facebook page. Tell me if you don't have Facebook, and we'll dig the link out and put it on here. Then May 11th, we're doing breeder contracts and warranties with two lawyers to help us think through how we should be handling buyer contracts, stud dog contracts, co-ownership contracts, all the contracts we deal with, because we're just so legally sophisticated, right? You know, we write all these contracts, and honestly, how many of us know what the heck we're doing? And warranties and guarantees. So that's the Platinum webinar on May 11th at 3 p.m. You will get notified, but put it on your calendar if you want to block it off. And then our next call, Q&A call, is 12 May at 8 p.m. And I want, if you have the chat, so we were going to do Bitch Infertility in June, and unfortunately that vet, because of COVID, has had to push it to the fall. She's just not going to be able to have it ready. So my thinking is to do reproductive nutrition. If you think that's a good idea, stick it in the chat and we'll go ahead and firm that up. Tracy's giving me a thumbs up. Terrific. So we'll do, assuming I get some positive Emily's. Okay, great. Terrific. So we'll focus specifically, now a lot of it's in the course, but it'll all be packaged in one place rather than having to find it throughout all of the courses. So reproductive nutrition in June. Great. Oh, there it is. Thank you, Sarah. No, she didn't ask for it. She gave us. So there's the link. Cut it, paste it into your browser. You should be able to register for it. And since you figured out how to use Zoom today, you will be able to do it tomorrow because it's a Zoom call. So it should be lots of fun. So first question from Tracy, pen hip versus OFA, is one better? So I'm not sure one is better. I think together they are a very powerful tool to reduce your hip dysplasia rate. I know I've said it before, and I have to stop tempting fate, but using them together, I went from an OFA fair bitch to 0% hip dysplasia and 23% excellence, which is about twice the breed average. That's by using both OFA and pen hip. Now, if you have a really good ortho vet, you can just use pen hip, because pen hip includes the pen hip view and the OFA view, but you need someone to help you read that OFA view. So what's the difference between the two? First, if you're not familiar with the two programs, OFA is run by the Orthopedic Foundation of Animals. They do one single hip x-ray and that is what's submitted. Positioning is absolutely key to that. Don't send in x-rays that are poorly positioned because you just will not get a good reading. PenHip does multiple views. It does three views. It does a regular OFA view. It does, and then there's a process by which they push the dog's femur into the hip socket. So they squish it in and then they put this fixed amount of pressure pulling it out. And everybody freaks out about that. The dog is anesthetized. They do not pull the dog's hips out of its socket. They don't damage the dog, but they put a fixed amount of pressure to see how far out it comes. Typically, if it's less than 50%, if it comes out less than 50%, the dog is in decent shape. PenHip does not give you a pass-fail. OFA gives you excellent, good, fair, borderline, mild, moderate, severe. That's not what PenHip does. PenHip gives you a number, actually a number for each hip, and they tell you where the dog rates against others in its breed that have been PenHipped. And they've got, for common breeds, they have a lot of dogs because this has been going on since the 90s, I think, maybe 80s. For rare breeds, obviously, as always, rare breed breeders are always going to be struggling with numbers. What are the two looking at? OFA is looking at the conformation of the hip. So similar to we're looking for conformation of dogs. What is the structure of the hip? So it's looking at how round the end of the femur is, how tight does it sit within the hip socket with no pressure on it. How is there any arthritic changes? Is the neck thickened? There's all these things that they look at, but it's just conformation. PenHip focuses on what's known as subluxation. How loose is the hip joint? Because a loose hip is going to bang around in there, and that's where hip dysplasia comes from. And so, of the two, if you have to do one, and your goal is to improve hips in your breeding program, do PenHip. The problem we have with PenHip is to be a good breeder today, you know, to be a reputable breeder, you kind of have to have an OFA number. And so we're a little bit between a rock and a hard place. OFA has shown very incremental improvement in hips in most breeds. PenHip took the Seeing Eyes German Shepherd breeding program, German Shepherds, one of the worst breeds for hip dysplasia, they took it to zero. They have no hip dysplasia in their German Shepherd breeding colony. They have no hip dysplasia in their Labrador breeding colony. They have, interestingly enough, 5% hip dysplasia in their Goldens. So they haven't been able to get their Goldens to zero, but they've gotten their other two breeds to zero. And 5% is quite low for Goldens. So that was solely using PenHip. No OFA whatsoever. So that's now the International Working Dog Breeders Association is now using PenHip and having very good luck reducing their rates of hip dysplasia in breeds that are prone to it. So it's hard to find a PenHip vet. The dog does have to be anesthetized, even though the OFA does recommend all dogs be anesthetized for OFAs. Most breeders don't want to do that. I personally do require all breeding stock to be anesthetized because you're going to get a better view of the hip joints. But I would never do that for pets or for non-breeding stock just because anesthesia has a risk. Question, does PenHip do elbows? No, sadly, they don't. They just do hips. I wish they would do elbows, but I think they just don't. They don't get enough money to make it worth going up against the OFA again, which the OFA sued PenHip. I mean, it just was not a pretty start for them. So. Okay. I'll answer your question. I'm glad you're on. I'm sorry I didn't get to it today. Jen says, how do you decide what PenHip score to use when breeding to an OFA? So if your dog is 0.3 or higher in PenHip, it has a very small chance of developing hip dysplasia, not 0.3 or higher, 0.3 and lower. So a zero, which I've never seen, is very, very tight hips. A one are very bad hips. So if your dog is a 0.3 or higher, it's pretty much doesn't have any risk of hip dysplasia. So you can think of breeding that as an excellent. So that's an excellent. An OFA excellent can be bred to a lot of, it can be bred to a fair, can be bred to a good, and you can do okay with it. If your dog is breed median to 0.3, you should breed it as a good. So that means you could breed it to a good or an excellent if you're breeding it to an OFA. If your dog is below the breed median, and that certainly is possible to breed that dog, you'll only breed it to an excellent. That's how I have thought through. Cornell developed this structure. I thought I had it in ITDB, where excellents are sevens and severes are ones. And that's how I managed my breeding program, was always shooting to get a 5.5 across the board. And so that's sort of how I thought about it, if that's helpful. Sandy says she's having audio issues. Are you good now, Sandy? No. I think Sandy's frozen, so that might be the audio issues. That or she's looking very stalwart while she sits there with her arms crossed. Okay, Teal posted this question. She's got osteosarcoma in a 13-month-old that she bred. It's a rare giant breed. In the breed, as I understand it, Teal, this is also a rare problem for your breed, unlike, say, Rottweilers, where it's a very common problem. Teal, I'm looking for you. Can you unmute yourself? Yes, there you are. Can you unmute? Do you want me to unmute? Oh, she's now 3 and was spayed at 13 months. Sorry, I can't.
Am I unmuted?
Yeah, you are. Hey. First, I'm so sorry.
It's been a fun day. So, yeah, so she's 3. She's a little over 3. She's 3 and gaining on me. Spayed at 13 months against my current training, which, you know, increases risks and, you know, rots and stuff. But with me not having any info with my breed, I have no idea what people have seen. It just, as early as it is, it worries me, but it also makes me think that it's even more fluky than if she got it at the median age of 8 to 10 years, but I don't know.
Yeah, so I think it's definitely something to think about. Now, I'll tell you, in almost all of your breeds, chances are you're going to have a couple early cancers in your breeding career. It just happens. If you breed enough, you're going to have an early cancer. They're awful. They are really, really frustrating, but you have to sort of get your arms around. In today's world, for almost every breed, at some point, an early cancer will show up. It might be lymphoma. It might be, what do they call it now, Barb? Not malignant, histiocytosis, histiocytic, whatever it is now. It might be hemangio. You know, they just show up. Now, that doesn't mean we should ignore them. I think we have to count them. And we have to say, okay, that's one for the litter, that's one for the bitch, that's one for the sire. You know, that's one. And I don't believe in dumping a dog because of one, but I do believe in sort of thinking through how I want to breed those dogs, the age I want to breed those dogs, and how I raise those puppies. And we know things like prenatal x-rays. Mm-hmm. And was the bitch x-rayed, Teal?
Okay, this was first litter. Yeah, she had one film.
Yeah. So, you know, so what I did when I had early cancers is I called Malcolm Willis in England and said, help, I don't know what to do about the genetics. And Malcolm was really, he's dead now, I'm sorry, you can't call him, but he was really, really, or you could call him if you have time and a Ouija board, go for it. But he said, you know, the most important thing is to gather the data and don't dump dogs trivially for a single case, because it could have been the spay, it could have been the combination, it could have been where they live, you know, it could be a lot of things. But you want to go back over all your systems again and say, am I reducing cancer as much as right. I know how to do? Then when you think about if you're going to breed or sire again, he should be older. If you're going to breed a litter mate,
everybody's out of the gene pool. So Arya gets spayed next month, and that was already planned. I was done. She's getting spayed. She's getting texted before I get thrown into a pio, because it's just going to happen, because I get everything. My breeder, apparently,
We all get everything, too. I know.
And then Caius is already neutered, so that's already done. So the parents are out of the gene pool.
Okay.
I have a very, very promising bitch that I kept from the second litter. So it's not a litter mate, but it's a sibling.
Full sibling.
I was going to breed. Full sibling. Yep. That I was going to breed next year, because my fertility window is also something we need to improve on, because it's so short with our breed. I'm thinking about pushing it out until she's 4 instead of 3. Because I need to see if I... they also have a half sibling that I just kept from this last litter. And so I was just like, well, I'm just done.
I know.
I want to just go in a hole. But she's just so promising. And I think in like 2-3 years, maybe I can, you know, stomach again. And I just don't know with a full sibling if I should, except for we went back and we traced. There's nothing that anybody has talked about behind these dogs. There's only been one osteosarc from my mentor, who's been doing this for 20 years, and it's not even related. So it's like, what the heck?
You know, honestly,
I just need to look at it fluky, I guess. And
well, I think you do both. You
look at it as a fluke and all that kind of stuff,
and you keep track of it. You know, we have children who get cancer at 6 months of age. Like, what the heck? Yeah. Why? How? So on the one hand, we have to say, you know, fluke simply means we don't know why it happened. And we don't know if anything that was done in the dog's life contributed to it. We just don't know. It doesn't mean that we relinquish responsibility. It simply means that we recognize that we didn't miss something, that there wasn't this long line of cancers that you didn't pay attention to. Now, to clarify, according to, I'm drawing a blank, Anne, oh my gosh, I'll remember, she's an oncologist, she was at UPenn, she's now in private practice. These cancers are inherited the same way, same gene, hemangiosarcoma, lymphosarcoma, osteosarcoma, malignant histiocytosis.
Okay. So the only one that we see pop up a lot really is mast cell. So, I mean, really the only thing that we have going for, like, that's going to get your dog is, for right now, is hip dysplasia and bloat. And then an occasional mast cell. And then that's why it just kind of, I was like, are you sure? And then I saw the x-rays. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's pretty sure.
They knew. Mast cell was not in her list. But when you are tracking pedigrees, don't say, oh, I don't see any, this is not just for you, Teal, this is for everybody. Oh, I don't see any other osteosarcomas, but I have 5 lymphos and, you know, 2 hemangios.
They're I see what you're saying.
They're all
connected.
Same.
I'm sorry. Gotcha.
Yeah, they're all the same. Mast cell was not on the list.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
They might be the same gene. They just express themselves in different ways.
Okay. I misinterpreted what you were saying, but that makes sense.
Yeah. No worries. And you may not have it in your breed, but just something to think about.
Oh, it may come out because nobody talks. And I mean, I have a pretty good hold on this line, and that's why I did it, because I don't do good with without answers and just kind of winging it. I can't do that, which is why I'm like, oh, am I going to do this again? Because there's so many variables. So
yep.
I don't know. I just don't want the phone call again, because it's pretty awful.
I know. If I can just talk to that for a second. So just really to be gloomy today on this really lousy rainy day, if you're a really good breeder, you're going to be at the death of every single puppy that you whelp. You're going to get that phone call, whether it's at 14 or whether it's at 14 years or 14 months. We have to kind of embrace that that's part of our job. And it's not a fun part of our job, but our job at that moment is to be there for our owners. And a part of us, you know, as soon as we get those calls, we start feeling guilty and we're racked with guilt. And really, what 99% of owners want is just somebody who cares about their dog and wants to be able to cry with you and talk about their dog and try and figure out what the next step is. The vast majority of breeders do not, owners don't call you to get mad at you or blame you or yell at you. They just want somebody who cares, because honestly, it's not that their vet doesn't care, but their vet's clinical. You know, their vet's like, what should we do? Who else do they talk to that will aid them in making those decisions or just listen to them, you know? So as much as you can kind of separate yourself from your owners, I think it'll help both of you. You can put your grief and agony off until you've helped them. And then, you know, you go through your own crying session, and it is tough. But if it's not this year, it's going to be next year. And I think that's something we don't talk about enough as breeders, that, yeah, we're there at the birth and it's fabulous and we're there on going home day, but hopefully we're also there to help them when they die. And
And, you know, honestly, every puppy texts in every month, because we have a, you know, a puppy Facebook group, and everybody, you know, I know where everybody is and we talk. And so, you know, her calling me was great, other than what it was. Then she called me back later to ask, you know, they're asking about surgery on Thursday. If the biopsy comes back this, what would you do? So there's still an open, but yeah, my defense went up immediately, but not bad. I mean, you just know, because you're right. I went straight to, oh my God, what did I do?
Exactly. And if you can, the one thing that I have pounded into my head over the years is when I get one of those calls, the very first things out of my mouth are, I'm sorry.
And then tears.
Yeah, exactly. I am so
blindsided, because they call me all the time to ask, because they run on my dad's property, because they're actually close to each other, which is nice. So my dad sees the dogs all the time. And I thought there was something they were going to tell me, hey, you need to check on your dad today. And it was just instant crying. And I thought, oh God, somebody got hit by a car, something happened.
Oh, when you answered, don't you hate it? You say, hi, it's Gail, and whoom.
Your water works.
Because they feel so relieved to talk to you. Sad, but relieved. And unfortunately, you get the burden, but that is part of the job. So back to your question and your puppy. I would hold off on breeding her. I wouldn't spay her. I would hold off on breeding her. I would try and push it as late as you reasonably can and still make sure you get puppies. So three and a half, four. I would look for an older male if you can. You know, and if fertility is an issue in the males, you know, you just want older. You don't need ancient. But if most sires,
I have some frozen, but I don't want to use it on maiden.
No, I wouldn't use that on the maiden. No. I would monitor. You know, I think it's really important for us to tell puppy owner, the litter mate owners, when the owner is ready, and then ask them. You know, it sounds like you're very close anyway, but you really need that feedback. You need that feedback from all the relatives. But you can't hold off on your bitch, and you can't say a single case of cancer is enough to shut down an entire breeding program. But
I guess it was something other than osteosarc. It's just because I see it so much in rehab, and it's just so painful. And I think that was my, I can't do this again. But I mean, the logical in me has come out after the last 24 hours of, you can't, you work too hard to scrap everything.
And chances are.
And I didn't know if that was wrong thinking.
No, I don't think so. So it sort of goes back to one of your comments. Do you want to dance with the devil you know, or the one you don't know? And if you're going to go get another dog, and you're going to get a dog from somebody who isn't being honest and isn't giving you information, you know, great, you start all over again with the puppy, you grow it out for 2 years and you don't know that genetics. So I'm not saying to be casual, and, you know, other people can chime in, but I think
watch and see.
Well, if we shut every breeding down, a breeding program down for a single cancer, we would not have any dogs.
And I have a puppy buyer who's also a rot person, and she was like, hey, I'm going to reach out to some people and see what they do. And so I got some feedback from them on, you know, if they have it, because they're always going to have that. It's just never this young.
Yeah.
That's just what was weird.
Yeah. And so I track dates of death on every litter. I track early cancers, which are mean 9 and younger. I track them really closely. And, you know, maybe pull the plug in a generation, but I wouldn't decide it right now.
Yeah. So I have nothing from her. Well, I have a male, but I can't use him on mine, and I'm not really interested in outside setting of it right now. So I have a litter, like an actual litter mate that's mine that I kept from that litter. And then I have the full sibling that would be, later, and the half sibling, obviously I'm less worried about, but the full sibling, I was like, oh great, here we go. We're good.
Yeah, bitches breed as late as reasonable. You know, if you want to use the frozen on her, you've got to plan 2 breedings. You know your breed's fertility. Males, just wait. Yeah. You know, hold off. The nice thing about males is we can wait.
Yeah, I'll freeze them and figure it out.
Yep,
later.
Exactly.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, hang in there. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay, I have work to distract me finally.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Daryl says his bitch, who is a burner, is really hungry. She's day 37 post ovulation. She has 6 puppies. She's gone from 4 cups to, he's gone from 4 cups to 6 cups in the last week. She's really popped. She's on Victor, drinking lots of water, peeing a lot, doesn't have a fever, doesn't seem off. Suggestions on feeding so she isn't so discontented. So 6 puppies is definitely not a large litter. I wouldn't want to go above 250% of her normal food. So I wouldn't want to go, can I do the math on that? 8. I wouldn't go much above 8 cups. So you're at 6 before the second trimester. I would see if you can add fillers like pumpkin, frozen broccoli, fill her up with something else, mix it in her food. Most dogs love pumpkin. Yours may be different, but most do. And so you want to give her, you know, half again, give her 3/4 of a cup of pumpkin per meal. It's not going to hurt her and it will help her. I would also consider feeding her. I don't know how many times a day you're feeding her, Daryl, but feed her more times a day so that she doesn't go through, I'm full, I'm starving, I'm full, I'm starving, and you get that cycle. That would be my suggestion.
Daryl?
Yeah.
I'm Daryl. I'm a woman.
Oh, Daryl, it's a woman. I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry, I know. I thought I would just introduce myself.
So I so appreciate it. We've been talking so much via email.
Thank you so much. I know it's a crazy time, and coming in, doing self-study and working independently, I've gotten so much great information, but sometimes I've just been like, ah.
It's a lot. I know it's a lot. Hopefully you've been able to focus in on the things you need. And I saw your question about whelping window, and I just haven't had time to.
No worries. I saw the chart in the blog, and I've been studying that. I have a call into my vet, so hopefully we'll come up with something. It just falls over that Memorial weekend, so.
I know. Yeah, Daryl needs to do a scheduled C-section on her bitch, and her whelping window literally is Memorial Day weekend, like the weekend. So,
and they'll work with me. They're really good about it. They just need to figure out which vet is working that weekend, because they do offer urgent care as well. So that's really good. But I just wanted to say about feeding her, I already feed 3 times a day because they're food vacuums and I just don't want them to bloat. So I've always done that. But she's just jonesing around looking for food all the time and just seems really discontented. So I mean, I can still feel her ribs, but when I went from 4 to 6, she just really like, whoa, she's pregnant.
And the puppies didn't get that big on day 37. It's not like the puppies got bigger. So
it's just, she does love pumpkin, and then the frozen broccoli is a good idea. I'm pretty sure she would just snarf that down too, but
mine love it frozen. So it's crunchy. Yeah. So you don't, if she's normally on 4 cups a day, you do not want to go above 10 cups a day by whelping.
Okay.
So that would be the max. I would actually try and keep it to 9 or below. So you can go up a little bit more now, but just know that that's your cap, and you want to sort of make progress towards it, not say, okay, you're going to get it all at once.
Okay, and then just consider the filler like pumpkin and broccoli to be not part of her caloric intake. It's just correct. Something so that, I read somewhere in the literature about raw bones. Yes or no for raw bones?
Raw, so there's two kinds of raw bones. There's raw meaty bones, which are consumed. Those are a no in pregnancy. There are recreational bones like marrow bones, which are chewed on but not intended to be consumed. Those are fine.
Okay, because I do, I get frozen femur bones, and
that
will take the edge off for her. So she has something else to think about. So
that's perfect. Yeah, I would give, there is that recent study that just came out about raw food having antibiotic resistant bacteria in it, but we posted it on the Facebook page, but it was 12 dogs in Europe. I mean, it was not an impressive study, but all of my dogs get raw through pregnancy and raw bones. So if you're getting it from a good company, I don't think you have to worry.
I buy them from the grocery store in the frozen section. They're the meat. They're the butcher. They're
those are usually humans. Pretty safe because the USDA.
They're food grade humans. So.
Monitors those.
Yeah. They're okay. Well, thank you so much.
Laura posted the upcoming VetVine webinar on recent advances in cancer immunotherapy. It's on May 13th. You can sign up. Laura, can you post it in Facebook or put the link here? I saw it last night, but I haven't pulled it out. But it certainly looks like a really interesting webinar. They also just had one on infectious diseases and vaccinations. I haven't had a chance to listen to that one either, but it looks pretty interesting.
Yeah, I just posted it.
A little further down?
Yep.
Thank you. And the VetVine, the AKC Canine Health Foundation webinars are pretty good. Tracy is saying Splash ended up with more mastitis. Holy cow.
The hell. Me too.
Yeah.
Mastitis. She's twice. Metritis to start with.
That girl is a mess.
She's getting spayed.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say it, but.
Oh, no. Oh, no. We said it.
Yeah. So is her immune system okay? Has she. No clue. Wow. So,
by 14 months, it should, you know, the vets are like, it should be okay.
Oh, yeah.
That it's not an age-related thing.
So, Splash has had 2 rounds of mastitis and 1 round of metritis, which is inflammation of the uterus, too. Which is really dangerous. Mastitis is bad enough.
Yeah. The Amoxi actually did knock that out. We got stuff. Her metritis was pretty good. And then it just went,
so bizarre.
It is. And she's still on the Clavamox. So
how the heck do you get mastitis when you're on Clavamox?
Good point. I don't know.
I'm sorry.
We're just doing everything the wrong way this time.
And how is she feeling? Is she sickly?
So yesterday she was in a lot of pain. It has not opened up yet. It's gone down with some, you know, I can't express anything out of it, but the puppies have been nursing.
Oh, good.
And so this morning it was better, and she actually stayed in the box all night. I was surprised. But
Renee did ask if you've cultured it. It might be worth it. Did you switch antibiotics or add? Or have you gotten them?
No. They wanted me to just kind of monitor her and see.
Poor girl.
Yeah, during the pandemic, this.
This is really what you needed.
And I just don't have great vet support for the we didn't establish her with Cheryl
it was an oops litter. Yeah.
Everything's oops about it. So I have a message out to Cheryl just to see what she thinks, but.
Let us know that, I mean, because that's.
But we're not going to do this again. She's going to be spayed.
I would spay her. I would be like, this was an early warning, so you didn't put a lot of money into a stud fee or something like that, but Lord, I mean, she may not survive it, let alone you guys.
It was good to see her eat last night, drink. I did give her some more subQ fluids. Everything we're doing, I'm catching it pretty fast. So, knock on wood, it's gone okay.
I'm glad Telus is home.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's not, but.
Well, and I'm only out doing visits, and then I chart from home, so I'm usually gone for no more than 4 hours a day, so I'm home as well.
Okay, that's great.
But it's nuts. Yeah, and Renee, definitely, we could culture.
Well, if you don't see a rebound pretty quickly, I think culturing would be a good idea,
yeah.
Just because, I mean.
Yeah.
She said Serenia helped a ton.
Serenia helped what?
Eating, I'm assuming.
While it's not technically labeled,
right.
Try it, and I saw a huge difference in the pain level with my girl that had
really?
The whole triad.
Pain level?
Okay. So because it does pain reliever in small muscle, so it's really good eye pain as well, but I saw a huge effort, and it sounds like you're kind of at the point where I was, where it's worth taking that risk to get mom feeling better so that you can kind of move on with things.
Well, and you know, I'm hospice. Everything we do is off-label. We use it for a beneficial side effect, so that's along my line. And I actually, where I'm supplement feeding, and I've actually got Ember going, so.
I saw Ember in there nursing him. That's a good auntie.
And she's actually, I mean, they are nursing and they're nursing hard. She's on, we're getting her going again, but there's clearly just a little bit left over that they're getting because they are not giving up and they are latched and tail doing their tail thing.
I bet that she'll have full milk pretty soon.
I know.
Well, hang in there. Let us know how she's doing.
Yeah.
Okay, Laura, a 3-year-old bitch that I bred once when she was 24 months. She hasn't come into season in the 16 months since then. Her first and only litter was a pup. She was a strong mother, recovered quickly. What can I do to determine if there's a problem? Can I push her along? If so, is it a wise move? So the question is it a good idea to bring her into season using one of the medications that we have? So, I mean, the first thing, Laura, for all bitches, put a little weight on her and see if you can let her live with a bitch in season. That's sort of the most natural, most innocuous ways to try and bring a bitch into season. It's really helpful that she live for 3 or 4 days with that other dog in the same house. A lot of times people say, my bitch just visited somebody for the afternoon and came in season. Problem is, you don't know if that's just pure coincidence. But we do know that bitches do tend to cycle together. So that would be number one. And then the two options that I know the most about are PG600, which Celeste has used several times and a couple of other people have, and cabergoline.
What was that called?
I'm sorry?
Second one, what was that called?
Cabergoline. I'll put it in the chat. Cabergoline is It comes from your vet. It does require a prescription. Depending upon the size of the dog, it may have to be compounded at a compounding pharmacy. It probably costs $200 or less for the full treatment. If it's more than $200, don't buy it, because somebody got a quote of $900 or something. I can't remember when that was. And that is insane. That's, Kamergling does not cost that much. It will typically bring a bitch in a couple weeks, but it doesn't always. It works on something like 85% of bitches. PG600 does not require a prescription. You can get it over the counter. You can get it from Revival. Isn't that right, Celeste? Yep. Revival. I can spell Revival. No, I can't. Animal.com. I think that's it. It's an injection given twice. I should let Celeste, you want to talk through?
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Everybody? Okay. It's an injection, IM, and it's
intramuscular. Intramuscular.
Two shots. One is given, and then the other one is given 5 days later, whether or not she's in season. Typically, it takes it's been my experience, anywhere from 3 to 4 days before they come into heat. The one time I used it, my vets and I thinking was, do not give a second shot because it was to bring her into heat, and she's into heat. And it turned out to be, an anovulatory, but anyway, she didn't get pregnant.
She didn't ovulate, we think.
I do all that testing, so it's hard to imagine that she didn't ovulate. But anyway, whatever happened, it wasn't good. And the second shot has always worked. Its side effect is causing pain, but it's been my experience with that. The shot is kept in the refrigerator. Do not freeze it. It comes in a 5-dose vial. So you're going to throw 3 of them away probably. Do not freeze it. It totally makes it not work. And the other thing is that the pain seems to be only if it's given when it's cold. So kind of warm it up to room temperature. I had one dog who cried, and she cried for like 2 seconds and that was it.
Celeste does have field trial Labradors, just to
qualify. They could have a leg falling off and not cry.
Now, is that an injection site pain or is it an overall discomfort?
Injection site pain.
So one of the tricks, actually, because flu shots do the same thing. Everybody loves when I give flu shots. So the best thing to do is not leave it out to let it warm out. Draw it up. You can warm it in between your hands. So in the syringe, warm it up for a while. And if you roll it back and forth between your hands, it agitates the liquid and helps warm it up. But it's definitely the cold, because people feel the same thing when people give cold flu shots.
That's exactly what my vet said to do. Good job, Tracy.
Tracy knows everything. So Olivia has a question about a video of how to administer PG600. I'm assuming it's like all IM injections, Celeste. Rear the muscle, the hamstring muscle?
It is find the hip bone and go 2 fingers above it, and that's where you put it.
Oh, in the loin?
Yes. Kind of like on the top, on the back.
Yeah, the paraspinal, those muscles either side of the.
And my vet taught me how to do it because I guess he got tired of me coming back just for those shots. So I do it. I do it myself now. It's very easy.
I don't have a video, Olivia. Maybe if Celeste does it again, she can. Video yourself. That would be great.
So is there a reason why I wouldn't want to do this? I mean, it is sort of tinkering with Mother Nature.
It is tinkering with Mother Nature. There, Cabergoline basically has no side effects that I know of. I'll let Renee chime in if she knows of some, but it's a pretty innocuous drug. If she's infertile, it isn't going to matter. She's not going to come in season. You know, so if there's something that's keeping her out, she's not going to come in season. It's really, if you want to go the all natural route, you wait. Well, put her with a bitch that's in season, put a little weight on her. But if you want to see if she can get pregnant again, you could use either of those two.
Okay.
Hey, Gail, do you ever use swabs? So when you have a bitch that's in season, swabber? Because we do that, and we just collected from a girl that was in season in January, and we freeze them. And then,
and you use them to bring bitches in?
Yep. And so we have the gal that's sitting next to me, that Celeste and I are both sitting here waiting for our girls to deliver. And I haven't brought the other one in because I wanted this one to go first. And so next week, if she hasn't come in, I'll probably pull the swabs out and use them.
And so it was tell me what you do, because I have swabs in my freezer. Tell me how you use them.
I have not done it yet, so I will say this is what I have been told I should do. So if you have swabs, you know that you've done either a Q-tip or something kind of up in the vulva, and we simply pull them out, don't necessarily have to unfreeze them, and you use the swab under the nose, and you can use the same swab evidently a couple of days. And with the girls that we've done it with, if there's a male in the house, the minute the male is no longer interested in the swab, you know to use another one. So we, you know, you'll do it, you know, 3 or 4 times a day, and it's similar, it's supposedly similar to being around another girl in heat. And usually within a week or so, they come in if they're going to come in.
Interesting. So if you followed the 10 things dog breeders should have in their freezers, one of them are either estrus swabs from your bitch or panty liners. You can just pull the panty liner out of her panties too, freeze those. Those are great for stud dogs, but if they work on bringing bitches in season, that's not a bad thing to do either. So, Laura, do you have any of those available?
Yeah, but I have to, no, I don't have anything frozen. Okay. I don't have another female. I spayed my other female last year. So I'll have to send her out and find somebody who has a bitch in season. Is there a preference between this PG600 and the cabergoline?
I think so. Cabergoline, you can use cabergoline on your bitch because she has had a litter. PG600 you can use on maidens successfully. Carolyn put the note in that her dog screamed when her gave her the shot. That's what PG600 is known for, is extreme pain in dogs. Not real long, you know, it doesn't go on for days, but most of us sort of struggle in causing pain to our dogs. Most people have their vet, do take the dog to the vet because of that, so that they can be restrained. Just be cautious if you don't restrain your bitch. Carolyn does say she didn't give the second shot and had 13 puppies, so Celeste might have been coincidence. Yeah, cabergoline can work on a maiden, but it's usually not recommended. But your girl's not a maiden anyway. And in both cases, the bitch should have come in season over 4 months ago. You know, at least 4 months ago, so her uterus had time to heal. So we don't do them back to back to back. Otherwise, I've used cabergoline. Celeste has had good luck with PG600. Obviously, Carolyn had 13 puppies with PG600. I've used cabergoline on 4 bitches. It worked on 3 of them. So I think it's a toss-up.
PG600 is only $49.
Yeah, so it'll be about a quarter of the price.
And no script. And very fast coming into season, if they come into season.
Yep. So I think it's kind of your choice. And you know your bitch, whether she's a tough bitch or not a tough bitch. So whether the pain will be an issue.
If she doesn't come into season, could I repeat it? Or is it a pretty sure thing that there's a bigger issue?
If you use PG600 and she doesn't come into season, I would go get a repro workup. Okay. I would say something's wrong. Cabergoline, since it only works on about 85% of bitches, harder to know you could do it again. But you use cabergoline for up to 30 days. Somebody, was it Mary that used it for like 47 days or something last year? Renee, you used it. How long did you use it, Renee? A long time. Can't hear you. 40 days?
Oh, it was 40 days.
40 days.
So what is it, like a daily thing or?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. And you just wait. You keep giving it till they come into season.
I wouldn't go past 40 days. The recommendation is usually 30. Mary used it 42 days. Yeah, I thought Mary had also used it a really long time. So,
okay.
Good luck. Let us know if it works.
Thank you.
Laura, does anybody live around you who's an avid dog person? They could leave swabs on your front porch in the morning or
something. I don't know. I live near Frederick, Maryland.
Frederick, Maryland. Put that out on the Facebook page. And if somebody's got swabs in the freezer, they may be more than willing to share. If they leave it on your front porch in a plastic bag, I would not leave it out overnight. Or the
Going anywhere.
The coyotes will have it in a heartbeat.
I'm stuck at home.
So Heather asks how long they last in the freezer. I don't know. I've used swabs for boys quite a while, you know, like probably 3 years. I'm sure at some point they begin to lose their potency, and I would guess fresher is better, but that would be
checking with the vet who gave me the advice now and see before the end of the call she'll let me know.
Oh, fabulous. That's great. That's really helpful. Cool.
Question.
Sandy, who's that in Frederick? Laura Hamilton. And she's looking for estrus swabs now to bring her bitch in season. Sandy is in West Virginia, I think. I don't see Sandy anymore. Where'd you go? So she may be, there she is. Hi, Sandy. Can you unmute? Charlestown. She's in Charlestown, West Virginia. That's
yes. I'll private message you, Sandy.
Yeah, so I'm really close, but unfortunately, I don't have any swabs.
Oh, you Pardon? Don't have any swabs?
Oh. Hello?
Okay, I can hear you, Sandy.
That's why I hear you, too. We have lousy internet, so I thought I'd frozen up again. No, but that would give me a reason to start saving them in the future in case I can ever help anybody out with them.
Thank you.
There you go.
Well, we'll have to get together sometime.
Excellent.
I'm on a
thing. Renee's saying that they use human scent for their trailing dogs for 10 or more years. I know that on cadaver dogs too. They use, you know, it's not like you, I won't even talk about the things they have in their freezers, but they don't, when they have them, they keep them a really long time. That's a really good point, I would guess. For males, I would guess they'll last a super long time because a male doesn't need a lot. He just needs a small amount of odor to think the bitch is in season. So, cool. Other questions?
Gail?
Yeah.
I got a question. Star is digging and digging and digging and digging and has all day today. What makes them dig? And should I be concerned?
Mine have excavated 5-foot holes. So I would not be concerned. I would be watching the clock, you know, to make sure you're in the whelping window. But if you haven't seen hard contractions, I think it's just super, super normal. What makes them dig? The need to make a den for their puppies. I mean, it's really innate to have a place to have your puppies that are safe. And that usually requires, were you in the group when Deb Celine's bitch excavated?
Yes.
Under her porch? Yeah. I mean, you couldn't see her. Full-size yeah. golden retriever. Could not see her in the hole that she dug. So
a wonderful reason to always use a leash.
Always. Yes. Yep. So I think you're still in stage one, your very favorite time ever.
Do you think, now think of this logic, when they whelp and they start digging, it's like a lack of calcium, right? Is that happening? Have anything to do with them doing that now?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, we don't know because we don't know that much about oral calcium, but I've never heard of anyone using oral calcium to speed through stage one.
Oh, no, I wasn't.
I know you would like to.
No.
You would have stock in Doc Roy's if it would make stage one get shorter. But we don't know. The thought is that it's just the instinct to find a safe place to have their puppies.
Okay. And, again, rule five, she's just never done this before. She's dug, but not this long.
Intensely.
She's licking her poor paws.
So she's uncomfortable. So yeah. when they lick their paws, it's pain. So she's probably having non-visible contractions that you can't see. But obviously watch your clock. But aside from that, unless she stops or, you know, you start seeing contractions and they're not productive. Renee does say maybe you should go to the vet a little sooner than in the past. I know. Not what you want to do. Not what any of us want to do, but you know, it's not worth losing puppies over. It really isn't.
No, and it's always that first one that takes forever. Just that first one. All right, I will consider. I'm still a few hours away.
So. Yeah, you're like 4 hours away, right? So I would talk to your vet about that last appointment, and okay. If you haven't seen them, just the, right. The car ride might do it.
Hey, well, I could run her around the block. Yes.
I was just thinking, you know, Franny had a lot of just digging and digging and it's like nothing was getting going. And I did a check and I did see a little bit of a sack, but I did not wheelbarrow. I did woods maneuver with her and kind of just adjusted her a little bit. We'd been walking and walking. And then, oh my gosh, within 60 seconds, we had three puppies. She had puppies kind of trying to come out together. And
two halves.
Yeah. And we weren't really, I mean, she wasn't really getting started or anything, but our timing was, it was long enough. And she was digging, you know, I'm surprised I didn't find floor tiles everywhere. She was digging so hard.
Yeah.
But I think Renee's right too. You know, if as you're going along, if things start seeming out of sort, even though the clock hasn't hit that magic number, check anyway. There's no harm in checking.
True. That's true. And you're right. She always seemed to need walking and stuff to get that first one going. And I've even done the woods maneuver.
You've done it today?
No, I've done some work, but nothing. This I haven't done it recently. The other thing I've done with her, which always makes the puppy come, and I don't know why I didn't think of it, is, now Gail, shut your ears. I had her trot a little.
Oh, that's fine.
Oh, okay.
But I would definitely start doing something now, because she, you know, her whelping window ends at 7 tonight, right?
If my temperature thing was right,
I think you have to assume it is, given she's in stage one. She's close. Assume it is, and don't wait until 7. You know, that's 48 hours.
I won't. Well, then it would be the emergency clinic, and
you don't
and that's right in the middle of our horrid storm also. So, all right, thank you.
Renee says she's got radiographic proof that woods and wheelbarrowing work. What do you have, Renee? You have like a malpositioned puppy and a...
Yeah, so my boss's bitch, much like Star there, was just not quite committing, was not going. And so we x-rayed her to see position and see what was going on. She's a small breed, couldn't feel anything. We x-rayed her and saw, well, he wasn't looking super great position. And we wheelbarrowed her for a few minutes. And then we took a picture right afterwards. So it was super cool to prove that it actually really does move them. Because you always wonder. You know, we say it works, but we always wonder, does it really work or what? But it was super cool to see. And then she shot them right out.
That's great to know, because I always feel so badly wheelbarrowing. I don't feel badly doing woods maneuver, but I feel so badly. This poor bitch is in labor and she's struggling. And, you know, and I've got her on her front end and she's like, please let me down. And nice, that's really great to know.
Yeah, it's super fun to see.
There are videos in, I think it's module 7, labor and whelping, for the woods maneuver and wheelbarrow. So you can go in and look at those videos to see how to go about doing it. In woods maneuver, you're trying to sort of realign the pelvis a little bit differently. And in wheelbarrow, you're trying to let gravity take the puppies back into the uterus so that when they come out the next time, they're better aligned, and Renee has proof that it works.
And so, I would also add for Celeste that I did have a bitch one time that had a very large litter with larger puppies, and she was so extended that she just couldn't get to contractions. Her body just, there wasn't enough. The uterus was so stretched it couldn't squeeze. And she did wind up with a C-section. But that was only once out of, you know, 30 some odd years.
Somebody showed that that photo, the image of a bitch that had to have a C-section with a really large litter this week, and you could see how thin that uterus was. So that can really happen. So Celeste, we're going to tell you all to, once we hang up on this call, to call your vet and...
Okay, I'll do that.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good idea.
All right. Thank you.
Cool. Last question. Heather wants to invest in a good whelping camera that can be shared with people. I think, so I use Nest. I know Sandy uses Nest. Tracy uses Nest. Mary uses Nest because I think I've got all these on the puppy cam page. Same. Lots of Nest by Tracy, by Renee. They're really easy to share. Now, I was reading some recommendations on the Breeder College forum the other day that were for another camera. I've used two in the past that I think one was a Panasonic or something. Janet's got a TP-Link Tapo. Yeah, Celeste.
No, it's Mo.
Oh, hey, Mo.
So we are training lots of people to help us with whelping and being litter hosts, et cetera. So we normally have more people at a whelp than a lot of you do. With COVID, I've moved into the whelping home and our vet will join us once things get going. But I'm going to Zoom it. So I've got everyone and I'm going to Zoom it and I'm going to record it. And so it'll be an experiment. So today I'm going to do a practice Zoom, and I've bought whatever it is, 100 gigabytes of
I was going to say, do you have the space? You need a terabyte to do a whelping.
No, I got a lot of memory and paid to have space in the Zoom cloud. So I'm going to try the Zoom and let everybody be there. And I'm just going to turn the recording off in between, as we all know, in between, there are lots of things you don't want recorded.
Exactly.
And so as puppies come, we'll turn it on and get it going, but we'll keep the Zoom call going for the full, whatever number of hours Kelly decides to go.
Oh, let us know how that goes. Yeah. Obviously I Zoom a lot, but not whelpings. But I Zoom a lot of meetings with my puppy owners. That's really, really common.
Yeah, I'm doing all my puppy raisers this way right now. And so we do one-on-ones as well as group classes. So I'm getting a little more proficient at it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a wonderful tool. It really is. You've moved in already into the.
Yeah. Well, I came over this morning because last year Kelly delivered 2 days before her due date, and that's today. So that's why they're
called whelping windows. Just saying.
I know. And I know that every whelp is different.
Yeah.
But this is a new whelping home. And so I didn't want them to have to be alone when the first pup came. And last whelp I had in January, I had 3 come in 10 minutes and I was all by myself. And I don't wish that on someone who hasn't done it before.
Yeah, exactly. The poor home that just volunteered to help.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Good way to not make them happy. So. Terrific, guys. Great to see you this afternoon. So just a reminder, tomorrow 1 p.m., you have the link for Good Dog. Dr. Hutchinson will be on. It will be recorded if you can't make it, but I'd recommend it so you can ask your own questions. Then May 11th, contracts and warranties for breeders, all kinds of contracts, all kinds of warranties, 3 p.m. May 11th. I think that is it. It was great to see you guys today. Wonderful. Good questions. And good luck with all those babies. Celeste logged off. I was going to say, Celeste, let us know how it's going. But hopefully she'll pop them out at the vets. So great, guys. Good to see you. Bye.